This is In the Zone with Ian Robb and Dancing Pete Rota. One's a mental toughness coach who also helps riders with recovery. The other, a horseman with soul, who is also a marriage counselor for the rider and horses. Together, they dive beyond ribbons and rankings to where real riders train, the mind. From elite arenas to quiet barns, this show is about the mental edge, the recovery rhythm, and the heart that keeps you in sync with your horse and yourself. So whether you're tuning in from the tack room or the open road, saddle up. You're in the zone now.
We're back at the World Equestrian Center here in Ocala, and we're in our cabin. And I got to tell you, I'm excited about our rising star that's going to be in the zone. Our guest today shows that proof that age doesn't define greatness. Grit does. She's a fierce young barrel racer who's already rocking up championship titles, run with the pros, and built on a bond with her horse that's deeper than words. But what really sets her apart is her mindset, Pete. She knows how to lock it in, quiet the noise. Pete, like she's born for it, because she was. Our next guest, please welcome our powerhouse in making, Alyssa Sloan. Woo-hoo! Hey, Alyssa, how you doing?
Good, how are you?
Doing well. So we have fun here in the zone. We like to have a little questions and go what's going on. Why don't you talk a little bit about yourself? Because maybe there might be an Eastern type writer that might not know about a race and your background. So tell us a little bit about who you are and what you've been up to.
So I've started since I was very little. I wasn't, you know, born into the horse industry at all. We've kind of figured our way out through the years. I've kind of learned from multiple different people how to go about, and it's really helped me a lot. I've qualified for the American. I have a world title, won a bunch of futurities and derbies on my mares. Really, they've just, it's kind of all just came together once you kind of hang around the right people. I've started my own business recently, learned how to break colts from a fairly young age. And then I've kind of just jumped on my own and started.
What's that name of that business?
Ace High Performance Horses.
Ace High Performance Horses. How'd you come up with that name?
So my mom has a cryotherapy business called Ace High Cryotherapy. So we kind of just joined them together because they could stick together. I'm hoping to, you know, take her business on top of mine once I kind of hit the pro circuit here in a few months. So we kind of just left it together.
So we've had a lot of guests that talks about where they were at your age.
Mm-hmm.
And then they got further along and they're older. So this is neat. We're doing In the Zone as the zone starts with the beginning of your career.
Yeah, right. But I'm going to surprise her because I've got a picture of her that was sent to me by a woman named Mandy Spencer.
Oh,
you know Mandy?
I do.
This is you on a horse.
Oh.
You know, because I had to take poor Brady to the hospital yesterday, and Mandy was working there. And she goes, oh, I know Alyssa Sloan.
Really?
And she goes, yeah, let me share this picture.
Yeah, me since I was real little.
Tell us about that picture and what that's all about.
So that's, I think, me and her little daughter. I couldn't remember her daughter's name. That's actually on my mom's horse that I first started riding off of and competing on of. Wow, that's a really old picture. I don't even know. I mean,
you don't know how old you were right there?
I would say I was probably about eight.
And when did you start doing barrel racing?
I started about eight. I had a little pony when I was probably about four, but never really went anywhere. And then my mom threw me on her rocket ship of a horse, and we kind of just kept rolling from there. You know, it's never stopped. The speed got faster as we went.
So do you remember the feeling of your first barrel race?
Yeah, I fell off. I hit the ground pretty hard.
Whoops.
Yeah, no, I mean, I remember I was on this little gray mare. My dad walked me down the alleyway like he still does to this day. And I took off around the first barrel, and it just, like, darted back to the alleyway, and I hit the gate and fell off the backside of the horse and got up and told myself, I'm never doing this again. Here we are, 10 years later, you know.
There you go. Still that's not it. So bad. So another good question we have for you is, I know in 2018, just a few years into your sport, you won the NBHA Youth World 5D and mm-hmm. District 1D Reserve Champion.
Right.
What did that early success teach you about confidence in racing smart?
Oh, wow. That was, you know, that's definitely eventful. So I went into that competition with a horse that had like a big lump on his neck. And, you know, we've had it tested, had a scan that told us completely fine, run it. Well, you know, he made a good few first and second go runs. Come finals, he kind of had a little stumble at the first barrel. But after that win, it kind of taught me more so grateful and to always like thank the horses after every run, because he really didn't have to try that hard for me even to win that title with what he had going for him. And even having a mistake, he still like tried as hard out for me as much as I tried for him. So it's kind of always just, it taught me a lot of like, you know, faith in my horses to be super grateful for every, you know, every run we make down the alleyway.
So before we go on a little bit more, you talked about that first race where you fell off.
Mm-hmm.
How'd you get past those nerves and get yourself back on that horse?
I think, if I remember correctly, I got up and told myself I wasn't doing this again. Well, my mom and dad told me that I need to finish out the show. It was a fun show. So they were like, you know, get on the horse. We'll pony you around, you know, whatever. After that race, I told myself, you know, my dad walked me, like lead lined me through the poles, everything, like just took it real slow and didn't go by myself this time. But I think kind of after I felt that first get back on and do it again is when I was like, yeah, this is it. Like, I don't want to try for anything else. Like, this is, and I think ever since like a very young age, I've always had that dream to kind of always be the best I could. And I think that first race just taught me to not give up on everything.
So what about when you were 11 and you were competing against adults? What were your thoughts after the kids fun day experience?
And then we got the big dogs. Yeah, so when I was 11 or 12, I was actually out in Vegas for the junior NFR. Competed in the one of the buildings on the second floor. And I was with a lot of people that I've never seen, never raced against. I mean, it's the whole country. And, you know, I didn't do the greatest. I ended up seventh, but with the second round, I didn't have a good second go round after the first round, so I was kind of like, oh, maybe this is not where I'm supposed to be. But, you know, I put faith back in my horse again and told myself this is what I wanted. Like, you know, you got to step up your game if you want to step up the leagues, you know. So I've kind of just really thought about and listened to a lot of people talk about how they've got past that same thing, and listened to my parents because they've kind of always been the people I look up to most. And they've kind of just pushed me through everything. They've always pushed me through the telling myself I don't think I'm ready to be out here yet.
Do you have a lot of that self-doubt talk?
When I was younger, I did. I had a lot of, you know, especially going up to the big leagues. I mean, you come from me doing the fun shows when I was, you know, 4 or 5 years old, and going up to world and not knowing what I'm getting myself into is when I was really like, ooh, you know, it's a scary world out there. It's not easy. And my parents just kind of always pushed me to do my best, even in those pressured situations.
So how'd you flip that negative self-talk to a positive self-talk? Did you use your horse that way?
I did. I used my horse telling myself that if my horse was capable enough to get me out here, he's capable enough to compete. And so are we. We're like, you know, we're a team. So if my team is, you know, capable to be out there, then they can compete out there as well. That's what I've kind of always kept in the back of my mind. And even to this day, I go out to the bigger barn races or the bigger slot races, and I'm like, oh, you know, I've never outran that people before. But they've qualified out there. They can compete out there is what I just always tell myself.
So what is your personal definition of being in the zone?
So when I'm in the back pen at a rodeo, barrel race, whatever it is, I've always put myself into the zone. I've always focused on a game plan. Don't, you know, I've kind of always stayed by myself, or it's just me and my dad. They've always, you know, it's just that's my zone right there. And I kind of take it as a job. It's like, this is what I'm doing. This is my job. I need to, you know, I guess the biggest mindset in my head is not to fail my horse. You know, there's going to be times where you don't do your well, you don't do your best, but it's always, you know, do my best and my horse can do my best.
So are you a right hand or a left hand?
I'm a right hand.
So first barrel's right.
Yep.
Two lefts.
Right. Unless the horse lefty, then I'm going to go left, but it's not the easiest thing to adapt to, but we get there.
You know, let's talk a little bit about fame, you know, your horse. What's something only you understand about that horse and cues or quirk or a vibe that no one else sees?
Her demeanor and her face tells everything. You know, she's got this look in her eye when she's ready to get on and get in and win. Or there's these times where I'm like, oh, you know, I'm not going to run her. She doesn't feel great. You know, and even my parents lost. We haven't even stepped a foot on her. I can see it. She's not ready to roll. I'm not going to make her go do it. So I'd get on another one. And then, you know, even warming up at the rodeos or something, she's got this little quirk that she does. She kicks her butt up in the air right before she runs, you know, warming up after she runs, whatever. It's like her hype thing. You know, and that's just, everyone's like, oh, she's hurt, she's hurt, she's hurt. It's just like her quirk. You know, it's like her getting herself ready to rumble. But she's definitely she her face and her demeanor, her attitude tells everything.
So if fame could talk after a run, what do you think she'd say to you?
I think she'd walk back to the horse trailer telling everybody that she won, even if she didn't. I really do. I think she would tell everybody that she won, even though she didn't. Now, if she hits a barrel, if we hit a barrel, whatever, it's a whole different horse. She's mad. It's like she knows. She'll walk back the trailer mad and like she'll try to walk on top of you and just like get me out of here. That was embarrassing, Mom. What did
I
you just
wonder
make
how
me
much
do?
that's of you.
All of it. She doesn't purposely try to do it. It's jockey failed.
So, what does a bad run teach you when you hit a barrel or anything like that? What does it teach you?
I think I just look over the run more than once and really focus on what I did wrong for the horse because, my horses try their best all the time. They're never gonna just go in there and do bad just because they're bad, unless they're having an off day, whatever. But I've kind of always, thought about it and never to, I don't hold bad runs to the next run, if that makes sense. I don't keep thinking about the bad run on to the next one. I just kind of fix my mistake and move on. And it kind of just helps my horse make more progress and have more confidence rolling into the alleyway.
So a fun thing to think about, Alyssa, is learn a little bit more about you is about in your head, like seconds before your barrel pattern kicks in. What do you do visualization? Do you breathe or something else?
So I kind of just I reach down to my horses and like tell him like Michael, I always tell him to go be awesome sauce. And Fame, I always tell her she's my winner. And whatever happens, happens. Like we're just gonna go out there and make a run and have fun. And then I always say a prayer to God, obviously, before I make a run. But it's kind of just my pre-run ritual because I always just kind of talk to them right before we go.
That's good. I like that. That's really important because there's a lot of high pressures in barrel racings. And so,
For sure.
if you have a certain routine that you like to do over and over again, and you're combining that with your horse, then your horse knows, okay, it's game time.
Okay. And honestly, that's the only thing I could say. Other than me talking to my horse before the run, my colt, he will not make like I don't. I kind of recently like found this out is I braid the end of his tail because it's so long. He steps on it, and at home when we're practicing, I don't braid his tail. So he kind of just cruises through the barrels all nice and easy. Well, I took him to a barrel race and didn't braid his tail, and he cruised through the barrels nice and easy. Braided his tail Friday here at WEC, and he like smoked a run. I don't know if it's just in my head or what, but I'm keeping it. The braid will stay.
I was gonna say, you gotta keep it going.
Right.
So some days the horse feels like a teammate, other days it feels like an opponent. How do you keep the connection consistent so that you don't fall into that trap?
I listen to my horse. I really try to read them, even at the house. If I'm trying to school on them and they're kind of giving me, a little bit of some fighting into them, or they're just not really working with me. I kind of try to really focus on how they feel and see if there's any physically their pain, or it's just they're not having a great day. And if they're not having a great day, I'll take them out on the trails and just go ride the trails.
So you can ride your tra the trails on your
Yeah, I kind of
trailer
just
horse.
walk down the road. Yeah, but yeah,
Okay.
we walk the trails and
Good
take them in the
job.
woods and
Good
all
job.
that.
I know lots of people that can't do that on their barrel
Oh,
horses.
I've had a few that you can't do that either. I don't have many more.
So, it's kind of interesting is thinking that I don't know if you ever had a cold streak or runs that just aren't clicking. How do you rebuild that confidence in yourself and your horse? Is it back to the basics? Is it a mindset or is it both?
It's a mixture of both for me. Normally, when I'm in like a slump, is what I call it, is because of between my mindset, and we're just not. There's a basic that we're missing in the run. I go through a lot of them, starting fraternity colts, like my red colt, he's a fraternity colt. So there's always going to be ups and downs with him. It's always just, I try to keep my mindset on always, he's still a baby. He's still learning it all. He's still getting his groove into it. Like I try not to, pound on them to, get them to do it right. I've kind of just slowed them back, get their confidence back to go in that speed and kind of bring them back up with the colts.
Who's your biggest mentor in the rodeo, and what's the biggest piece of advice they've given you?
My biggest mentor. Probably Christine Dorenzo. She told me, I used to work for her with the barn and I used to help her. She always told me that the mindset going into the pro rodeo circuit meant everything. You don't go into a rodeo thinking you're going to do bad or you can't compete. You always go in there thinking that you can be the best. whether you are, you aren't the best, whether the standards tell you you are or you're not. You know, you always go in there feeling like your best and doing your best. That's always stuck with me.
So I want to give a shout out here to Ocala, since you're based here and you grew up here riding and training. What's your favorite local memory that fuels you, your passion to keep on improving here?
So there's this rodeo that we had right here in Ocala at the Ocala Horse Park. It was probably almost a year ago. I had fame at the rodeo, and this, like, the ground's real sketchy. Like, a lot of horses were falling and just kind of making really bad steps. And, you know, I've talked to a lot of people in the slack. I was in the perf that night. So I was talking to a lot of people that were in the slack, and they were like, no, don't run fame. Like, she can't, like, don't hurt a good horse. And I was like, you know, if the ground's that bad, I won't, you know, I'm never going to put my horse in a bad situation. But, you know, thinking about my horse and thinking about the ground and how she runs and how I can run with her to stand her upright on that ground, I just told them, I was like, she's got it. I'm like, we have it. I'm going for it. And they're like, and they were like, I'm going to say a prayer for you and your horse because it may go bad with the ground. And I'm like, nope. And I sent her down the alleyway, and she ended up winning that rodeo by 7/10 and set a new arena record in that pen. So she definitely did what I felt like she could do.
So what's the toughest lesson you've learned from a bad run, and how do you use it to come back stronger?
There was a time, I can't remember what, maybe it was World. My horse qualified back at the finals in the 1D. Actually, it was last year, Shotgun, the colt. He was making perfect 1D runs, you know, ran a 14.8, hit a barrel. Came back in the redemption round and ran a 14.9, was just a few holes out of qualifying back for the finals. Well, you know, I knew he was my best horse I had on the horse trailer. I knew he could compete, but, you know, I always told myself, like, how I keep going out of those situations is always just, like, God has a plan. God's timing is not right for me yet. So it's kind of just, I've kind of always stuck, and I've always said, you know, there's another bonus on why we didn't win this one to go win the next one, or whatever bonus it meant for me to go win that one.
You know, we just had Al Dunning, who you just met a little bit on the podcast before you, and he had these lucky socks, these lucky red socks, and he would wear them so much, he put holes in them, and then he would put another sock over that right. sock and do that stuff. You know, I was just curious, you know, he was very OCD. He said he was, everything had to be a certain way,
right.
Non-negotiable pre-race rituals. What are your rituals in mind or body, or do you have any lucky socks or music you play or?
Pickle socks.
Lucky pickle socks.
Yeah, they got little pickles on them. Between that and when I really feel like I need the extra boost of confidence that day, my colt wears these white split boots that will stay dirty until you can't tell they're white anymore, and these polar wraps on their hind legs. They got little ace of spades and cards on them. That is the only thing I will put on him, is if I need a little extra boost.
There you go.
And
I like
braid
that.
His tail.
And braid his tail now.
So during a barrel race, what song would be playing if you could have your choice as you come in the arena?
Well, that's a good one. I like that.
Probably Reach for the Sky by Firehouse. Me and my dad's a big rock fan, and he always played that song when I was little, and I'd run around on my feet in the barrel pattern in the house. It's always stuck with me. I still listen to that song before I run every so often.
Very good. So do you have plans to go to the NFR? And get your PRCA card since now you're 18.
I do. I'm going to try to hit the PRCA circuit first before I really, you know, put my foot down and go in with the WPRA circuit for the NFR. I just want to make sure my horses are set up and ready to roll for those, you know, long hauls, hard grounds, you know, all that.
So, I mean, you're still very young, especially compared to Pete and myself, you know, and you're already turning heads. But what's your 5-year vision for your rodeo career, both in competition and beyond? What do you envision for yourself?
So I vision myself on hitting the pro rodeo road, you know, just constantly hit it until I make what I want to make. And then, you know, even still, you know, make it as many times as I can. And have, you know, one or two training horses on the trailer with me and sell them as I go to keep that income supporting everything. It's kind of always just recently, that's kind of what it was or what it is now is, you know, 5 years, I want a rodeo and I want to have training horses on the road with me and just live out the roads.
So barrel racing is known as a sport that you can do for many years. Some of the top barrel racers are in their 60s.
Right.
So do you plan on doing it that long? Or?
I plan on going until my body tells me I can't do it
80,
no more.
80 years old.
So it's so strapped in that saddle. That's what it takes.
That's too funny. That's too funny. Also, because you're building your own brand at a young age, you're only 18. How do you balance being a competitor, a student of the sport, and a businesswoman in the making?
Honestly, the balance is hard. I won't lie. It is hard trying to be all of those at the same time and switch your mindsets from a getting on a training horse before the barrier race to getting on your pro rodeo horse in the barrier race. It's a real hard switch, and I've had to learn the hard way on how to, kind of switch my brain and my thinking process about everything. But I kind of, my whole life has revolved around my horses. That's all it is. So I kind of just mold them together and make sure I got riding my client horses first, and I get on my personal horses after. It could be dark time by the time I get on those, but I've kind of always just juggled them together.
Describe in the zone while you're running a pattern. I mean, I have buddies that were bullfighters, rough stock riders, and describing an 8 second ride could take 2 hours. So barrel racing is a lot longer than 8 seconds. So how would you describe your barrel race in the zone, moment to moment?
Honestly, I think I couldn't explain a run to you because every time I go down the other way, I don't want to do too much. I don't want to get ahead of myself and, cause my horse to stumble or, ask him to turn too soon. I kind of always just go down the other way thinking I know what I know and I do what I've always done. It's always just go in there, make three turns, and come out.
So, are you big on setting your horse up, leaving him alone, micromanaging him?
It's the whatever the horse needs. Like my mare, you have to leave her alone in the turns. You kind of just get there, bump your inside rein, and let her turn. My colt, on the other hand, he's a little bit harder to ride again because he's a baby, but he's more of the, get there, kind of sit him down, really shape him around the barrels and get him to go straight. I mean, it's just, and then my client horses, they're still learning, so you really just got to nitpick on them and really get them to make that right step.
How do you train those riders, though, too, through these horses?
So I take, coming down to, the end of their month of training or however long they want them there, however long I have them, they'll come, towards the end of their riding, their training time, and come ride with me for, I mean, I've had a girl stay with me for a week straight, just come ride and ride and ride, and then I still have, people that I've, one of the first client horses that I took in, she's actually has her horses boarded at my place, so she's constantly still riding with me. I mean, I've had their horse at my house since May. I mean, they just left him there and they come ride and they ride with me, figure out the horse, figure out them. I help them with the lessons and they kind of just always stick with it. I mean, they kind of, when they want to win, they come and ride.
So, what's a hobby that is non-horse related that we wouldn't expect you to have? Are you a knitter?
No, I'm not a knitter and I'm not a reader. What do I do besides horses?
That's about it.
That's literally, I'll go to the beach every
Sleep.
once in a
Okay,
while.
go to the beach. There you go.
Go take a weekend off to myself.
So, that's kind of interesting because we were talking about, lessons or whatever that you might have learned in the saddle. How has that helped you in life outside the arena? Because now we're trying to get you to think a little bit more about outside the arena. What lessons have you learned while in the saddle that has helped you?
Well, when I was younger, I used to ride like a lot. I've done a lot of clinics with Gene Cox, and I kind of rode with him for a while. He's kind of taught me the day-to-day life, like kind of more of the stuff that in the saddle works outside the saddle. Just kind of like the same thing about the way the horse moves around the barrel. It's the same thing on how you like turn a truck around or, hook up a horse trailer, like the angles about everything. And then, just life itself. I've learned a lot of patience and commitment with my horses. I do that between my clients and, my life myself. It's a lot of patience on what God has in plan for me and a lot of commitment on what I want to do in life.
So, if you won the biggest check of your life tomorrow at a barrel racing, what would be the first thing you would
Well, how big of a
splurge?
check are we talking?
100,000.
What would I go buy?
What would you splurge and what would you invest?
I'd probably go buy two or three really nice 2-year-olds for the barrels and kind of put the rest of it aside for later in life or whatever. I'd go buy 2 2-year-olds, one that I'd flip and sell and one that I'd keep, and then sell the flip one and buy more.
So would you keep the better one or flip the better one for more money?
Depending on my life on that time. If I'm winning rodeos, I'll probably end up keeping it. If I'm not, I'm kind of sticking to the train and sell the better one.
You go. What's that like, flipping horses?
I personally flip a lot of horses, mainly because I like a lot of horses. Every time I get on something, I'm like, yep, I'm gonna keep this one. but I flipped a few in my life. You know, I kind of always buy the ones that I don't buy the ones that everybody wants. I kind of buy the ones that are always in the back of the pen. You know, oh, stay away from that bloodline. It's not that great. Well, I go buy that bloodline, you know, and I turn it into something else and turn it into something great. Just like the thoroughbreds, I'm kind of making a plan on getting a few off the track thoroughbreds and turning them into really nice barrel horses because, you know, you got the title of the crazy thoroughbreds, you know, the ones that just run across the track and don't know nothing but a circle. And I want them to be something that you could go ride around outside on the trails or go run it in the barrel pattern, you know, take it to the cow pen. I want something that people don't expect to be what it is.
So you like turning those diamonds into, or
I like turning the dust into a diamond.
exactly. And that's good. That's talent right there, because not everyone could have these all American or
And sometimes most people are looking for the already made
right.
horse. They don't want to put the time in to make something.
Well, that's in the barrel racing world. You know, they go by the bloodlines that are already winning. They don't look back onto the grandsires or the sires that were winning back then. You know,
No.
I've kind of always looked for the sires that won back then and what they've produced.
So do you like a short pattern or a long pattern? Ian's over there going, huh?
I don't have a preference on it mainly because my horses run. I have, you know, my colt runs likes the littler stuff. My mare likes the bigger stuff. So I kind of have two horses that adapt to both things. I think my favorite stuff to run on is like the short Coliseum patterns, the ones where the first barrel's kind of out of nowhere. You just gotta make that stripe right. I kind of like the unexpected indoor Coliseum types of deals. I like the perfs. A lot of loud noise.
Exactly. Hey, I'm going to have some fun. You know, what message do you hope young, aspiring barrel racers? Now, you're only 18, but we're talking about that 8-year-old. Okay. We take away from your story and your mental approach. What would you say to that 8-year-old?
I'd tell them not to give up and not to just kind of read on what you have right now. You know, always think on what you have right now, but never give up on what you want later. And kind of always listen to what everybody has to say. Like, don't just think that, you know, even as horse trainers or good barrel racers, you know, they always say nobody knows everything. You know, I'll take somebody that runs in the 5D just because, you know, I think they run in the 5D, they don't know nothing. That's not how I am. I'll take what they know and try it myself. You know, certain things work, certain things don't. But I think my biggest thing I'd say to the 8-year-old would definitely be like, don't just put yourself at a standstill.
So that 8-year-old is you. You're talking to yourself when you're 8 years old. Is that exactly what you would tell
That's
me?
exactly what I tell my 8-year-old self is don't just stop on what you have right
Here we
now.
go.
Go strive for something bigger and better. Don't be the big fish in the little pond.
Here you go, Pete.
I think this is good.
I'm gonna have a little fun right here. So you're young. I'm sure you listen to music, right? Okay, so pre-race playlist. What three songs do you listen to?
That's a hard one. I don't know. Definitely the Reach for the Sky by Firehouse.
All
That's a
right.
really good
You already
one.
used that one.
But that one is just kind of something that I've always stuck with. But besides that one, I guess if we had to pick a new three, it'd have to be Animals by Nickelback. That's a good one. Oh, shoot.
Well,
Probably one of the AC/DC songs. They're a good one.
Thunderstruck.
Yeah, that's a good one. Some kind of like upbeat rock music, I probably have to say. I listened to those before I run. They get me hyped
Okay,
up a lot.
good. Good. So you're not listening to classical like that.
Listen to the slow stuff. I mean, when I enter the rodeos, I'm like, give me the perfs.
That's funny.
Yeah, I don't think I can make a third one.
No country.
I listen to some country, but it's not like my pre-race song, I would have to say. I
Oh,
don't think it
I
would
would be
be.
listening to Garth Brooks' The Rodeo, so
That's a good song
that would be
too,
getting me
but
hyped up to go in there and win a buckle. See,
yeah.
Alyssa and Pete, when I played football, I'd listen to rock. You know, I listened to Rolling Stones. I listened to Who. When I played basketball, I listened to, back then it was like soul music or whatever, you know, like a lot of that kind of stuff. And then, you know, like the Gap Band or whatever,
Wait
you
a
know.
minute, let me guess. When you played tennis professionally, you listened to classical
Hey, I actually
music.
did.
Yeah,
I
I knew
actually
it.
did. I
I
listened
knew
to it.
it.
But then I was actually, when I was out there, I'd calm myself down because I would
Right.
want it so badly. I actually would sing. I would sing between points, you know, and
Right.
do that stuff. And I would just have fun. Probably some people looked at me like I was a little nutty, but I
Well,
was having a good
that's the
time.
same thing I do. You know, when I feel like I get myself too much on the muscle and I want it too bad, I go walk away. I
Yeah.
can't get all, you know, ready to go win to the point where I'm like, oh, step back a little bit.
I think this has been great because I hope we get her back in about 4 or 5 years and then hear about all the winnings and now the NFR and all this. So to me, this has been a really fun future in the zone
Yeah.
to somebody to we've interviewed people of success and talked about when they're this age starting off. Now we talk to somebody starting off at this age, and now we're going to hear about the future.
And I love how Alyssa talked about, how greatness starts with the belief in her horse, belief in the process, most important, belief in yourself. Even when no one else sees the full picture, all this stuff. But your story is just getting started, Alyssa. But your focus, you humility, your fire. I mean, I love it. I could feel that fire in you right here, just talking to you. And to me, you're already a world-class rider. So look, to every young rider listening, take notes. This is what chasing your dream with heart and horsepower really looks like. Alyssa, we want to thank you for stepping in the zone with us. Before we're cheering on to the next stands and from the mic, you want to tell people how they can find you and follow you and all that other good stuff.
So I have a Facebook page. I have two Facebook pages. I have a personal Facebook page where mostly all my wins get posted on. It's just Alyssa Sloan on Facebook. And then I have my Ace High Performance Horses Facebook page. That's kind of where everything gets posted on what kind of goes on in life. And then, just kind of all my posts about everything. And then you can always reach out, on the business Facebook page to, client horses or lessons or anything like that.
And what's the name of that business Facebook page again?
Ace High Performance Horses.
I won't forget that one. So there you go. All right, Pete, I'm good. Alyssa, you good? All right, thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
That's a wrap on another powerful episode of In the Zone with Ian Robb and Dancin' Pete Rota. Whether you ride, compete, or simply love your animals like family. Today's episode was a reminder that true teamwork starts with connection and that health is the ultimate performance edge. Don't forget to subscribe, share, and leave us a review. And catch us next time as we dive deeper into the mind, body, and bold journeys of top performers. Until then, stay focused, stay inspired, and keep riding in the zone.